podcast from King's Church Leicester, part of the New Frontiers family of churches. If you enjoy this podcast, why not join us at 10:30 on a Sunday morning? We meet in the Underwood suite of the Leicester Tigers Rugby Stadium. We'd love to see you.
We're at the start of Romans 13, just the first seven verses. But I have to confess, I can't really cover all seven of these verses this morning. There's just too much in here. It might not look like it at first, but I think you'll see as we work through this morning that there's really masses are going on in this passage. So I'm just going to read it through. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed. And those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For the same reason, you also pay taxes. For the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed. Revenue to whom revenue is owed. Respect to whom respect is owed. Honour to whom honour is owed. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you so much that we can trust it completely. As completely truthful and trustworthy, something which we can grasp a hold of and know more about you as a result. God, I pray that as we work our way through this first bit of Romans 13 this morning, that you would help me to explain it clearly and rightly, and you would help all of us to hear it and take it on board. Let it penetrate our hearts. Let it impact our lives. Let something happen as a result of hearing God's word this morning. Okay. This is kind of a bit of an odd passage because it's extremely clear what Paul is saying. Really, really, no doubt about what he's saying here. First of all, let every person be subject to the authorities. Authorities, us underneath them, subject to them, follow them. Okay? Why? Because God put them there. So we're here, we submit to the authorities, because the authorities serve God. No problems there. Really straightforward instruction. Okay? If we resist the authorities, Paul says, then we're resisting something that God put in place. Fair enough. God put the authorities there. We resist. We're resisting God also. And if we resist something that God's put in place, then we incur judgment. We're doing something wrong against God. So obviously, we take judgment for that. We're punished for it. God has to deal with us because we're going against something he put there for us. And then he says exactly what rulers are like. He tells us precisely how governments and authorities work. He says they're not a terror to evil. They're not a terror to good, but they're a terror to evil conduct. When somebody is evil in the nation, the government punishes them. When someone is good in the nation, the government approves of it and says, look at this good thing that they've done. Okay, so this is really simple. Authorities deal really well with good people, really harshly with bad people. No problems there so far, okay? And obviously we can submit to a government that's like that. That's not a problem. And Paul goes on to say in verse 5, therefore, as a result of what government is like, because we all know government's just like that, as a result of what government's like, we submit to it. And we submit to it to avoid God's wrath. That is, if we do evil, then we're punished. And actually, when the government punishes, they're doing it on behalf of God. The evil that happens in this world is dealt harshly with because God wants it to be dealt harshly with. So when a government, you know, puts someone in prison for breaking the law, they're actually an instrument of God. They're serving God by doing that, whether they like it or not. So we should be good and submit to the government to avoid his wrath, to avoid punishment. Why else should we be good? Well, it says here, we should also be good for the sake of conscience. And why is Paul saying that? Well, I think he's saying that because, as we all know, not everyone who breaks the law gets caught. You can break the law behind closed doors when no one else is watching. You can break the law in a situation where you know absolutely that no one will catch you. You won't get caught. And so Paul puts this other extra thing in place. He says, we're not just following the law, we're not just submitting for the sake of, avoiding punishment, but also for our own conscience. Also because we know when we've broken the law, we know when we've done good, and we know we should be doing the good things. So we submit to government to avoid punishment and also for our own conscience, so that we can live with ourselves, so that we know we've lived a good life. Okay. That's dead easy, yeah? No problems there. I can go sit down. But, I mean, this is this sounds great, doesn't it? But we're talking here about an ideal government. Living in a place where the authorities and the rulers do exactly this. But we know, because we live in England, that they don't do that. Always. You know, I think, on the whole, the rulers and authorities in Britain are pretty good, actually, at doing these things. Certainly when you compare them to other countries in the world and other people in history, the rulers in England, in the UK, are pretty good at this. So we have a fairly easy time of it. But even here, where it's pretty good, we know that's not the reality that we live in. We know that some people are punished for things that they didn't do, and some people get away with things which they shouldn't have done. And also, the government allows and condones and accepts some things which are evil. We know it does that. And the government, on occasion, deliberately punishes things which are good. And we know it does that. I'm sure you can all pick out a dozen examples of when the government has punished something which we shouldn't have been punished, or let something go which should have been punished. So we need to ask ourselves a few questions about what Paul's saying here. I think the first question, the most important question really on this passage, is, does Paul really mean we should submit to every authority? Does Paul really mean that whatever government we live under, whoever has authority and rule over us, we must submit to them? Now, I think that to some degree that has nothing to do with how the government deals with moral issues. Because how Paul starts this passage is he says, let every person submit, let every person be subject to the authorities because God put them there. He doesn't say because they're good for you, because they deal well with moral issues. He says because God put them there. So whether your government is dealing appropriately with justice, with morality in its country, doesn't really have any bearing on whether God put them there or not, and whether you should submit to them. So we need to take a step back. Did God really put them all there? Did God really put Robert Mugabe in rule? Did he really put Adolf Hitler in rule? And if he did, then do we really have to submit to them, who I think we can all agree are pretty evil people? So, to have a go at answering this, first I want to think about the context that Paul is writing in. This letter is not to a church who live in a perfect government, in a perfect country, in a perfect city. This letter is written to the Roman church. The Roman church was in the city of Rome, unsurprisingly, under Roman rule, and also... Paul must have had in mind the other authorities in the world at that time, people like the Jewish authorities who he had dealings with. And when we look at what the Jewish authorities and what the Roman authorities were like, we don't see a picture of a very good government. The Jewish authorities very deliberately attacked Christians, very deliberately persecuted the church. In fact, Paul was among the Jewish authorities who attacked Christians. And the Romans, well, they were actually, in a lot of ways, were worse. The Roman rulers and the Roman authorities at that time put a lot of energy into crushing anything which might oppose Rome. They were conquerors. And if you look at the history of Rome, from the early age of the church, for the next sort of 100 years or so, they were very much against the church. They killed a lot of Christians. So we're dealing with a city, a church, in a place where the government is very much not like this. And yet Paul still writes these words. So I think we have to take them fairly seriously. And I just want to pull three very specific examples out of the Bible of authorities, of rulers, who it's really clear that God put in place, but were not good people. First of all, I want to take you back to the Old Testament. We had King David. He was pretty good. On the whole, we kind of like King David. He followed God. He took the nation of Israel with him in following and honouring and worshipping God. And then his son took over, Solomon, who was blessed with wisdom and grew the nation. It prospered, but he drew them away from God. Under Solomon's rule, idol worship came in. Worshipping of other gods came into the nation, and morality deteriorated. And then after Solomon, we get this king called Rehoboam, and he was worse. He crushed the nation. He ruled really harshly. He put God out of the nation entirely, and he built masses of idols across the whole of Israel. And then after Rehoboam, we get this king called Jeroboam. And at the very start of his reign, he calls his advisors together, and he says to them, give me some advice on how I should rule Israel, how I should deal with these people. And this group of old advisors, these wise men who had many years of experience, came to him and said, what you should do is you should rule gently and mercifully, and the people of Israel will love you and follow you. And there was this other group of advisors, these young men, who came, and they said, what you should do is, your father was harsh. You should be more harsh. You should crush them into submission, and then they'll follow you out of fear. And Jeroboam, being the very wise king that he was, went with the young men. And he hammered Israel into submission. He was the one who split Israel in half. His rule was so harsh that most of the nation left said, we don't want you as our king anymore. He was up there among the most evil and brutal kings of Israel. And there were some pretty bad ones. But it says in 1 Kings 12, verse 15, this is right at the start of his rule. So the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of affairs brought about by the Lord. One of the most evil kings in Israel's history was put in place by God. Can't argue with that. And then if I take you forward a few years to King Nebuchadnezzar, who ruled Babylon. And he was the one who came in and invaded Israel, sacked Jerusalem, spread the people across the known world, destroyed the city. He decimated the people of God. And about Nebuchadnezzar, it says in Jeremiah 27, verse 6. And this is the Lord speaking. Now I have given all these lands into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant. So within Israel, we have a king who was extremely evil, who God put in place. And outside of Israel, we have a king who was extremely evil, who God put in place, who served the Lord. And then one more example, just to make you absolutely sure that we're talking about every ruler and authority in this world. God puts them all in place, even the most evil people you can think of, even the Robert Mugabes, even the Adolf Hitlers. There was a man in the New Testament who, in a single act, managed to completely turn this whole concept of morality and judgment on its head. He took the man who had lived a perfect life, who had done nothing wrong, and he crucified him. Pilate, who, when Jesus was before him, said, I can't find anything wrong about you. There is nothing in your life that I could punish at all. As far as Pilate could see, Jesus was in fact perfect. He could not bring anything against Jesus. And yet this is what happens in John 19. So Pilate said to him, you will not speak to me. Do you not know that I have authority to release you and authority to crucify you? Jesus answered him, you would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given from above. So we're told in Romans that governors, rulers, authorities are supposed to approve of good behavior and punish bad behavior. And they should do that because they serve God. And yet this man who was serving God because God gave him the authority did the absolute opposite. In the harshest way possible, he punished the best man ever. So first of all, I want to say yes. We should submit to every authority. Because every authority is put there by God. You can't contest that. You can't argue with that. The Bible could not be clearer on this fact. And Paul says, the first reason we submit is because God put them there. We submit to God because we believe he is the ultimate authority. If he puts another authority in place over us, we must submit to that as well, because it's God's. By doing what the government tells us, we're doing what God tells us. Okay. But then another obvious question appears. What on earth do we do when the government tells us that we should be doing something evil and we shouldn't be doing something good? How do we deal with a situation when the people in authority over us are telling us to be evil? How do we submit to that? And to some extent, Paul is focusing in on rulers and government here, but there is definitely a degree to which you can apply this to other authorities, like your boss at work. When your boss tells you that you should lie in order to get the money in. If your boss tells you that you should just pretend that actually you did spend that little bit of money so that we can get it on the budget next year. You know, what do you do about that? Yet Paul's saying really clearly, submit. Well, I want to think about, to try and kind of untangle this, there's a handful of examples in the Bible of people who do resist authority. I want to just think about two of those examples, and I want to think about the seriousness of the thing that they're resisting. So the first one I want to look at, and I think probably the one that comes to people's minds most readily, is Daniel. When the king in Babylon, his advisors come to him and trick him into forbidding prayer. And Daniel hears about this law, understands that it's the law, and ignores it completely. Goes into his room, same as he did every day before that, and prayed at the window in full view of everyone. He did not change his habits in the slightest. He didn't even kind of step away from the window and hide a little bit, but still pray. He very deliberately stayed in the spot that he had always prayed in and defiantly said, "No, you can't stop me from praying to my God." Okay. That is not on the same level as ignoring the government because they raised taxes. You know? That's not on the same level as some kind of moral issue that we're faced with. This is on the level of, can I or can I not communicate with God my Father? That is a big thing. So when government blocks a big thing, like can I speak to God, then yeah, we resist that. The other kind of example, the other kind of marker of the sort of level things have to be at before we can resist what governments say is when the church was still pretty young and the disciples were in Jerusalem and they were preaching the gospel and the Jewish authorities came and they arrested them for causing kind of a public menace, for causing disruption. And they took him into jail, and they said to them, "Look, we're going to let you go now, but you must stop preaching the gospel." And what do they say? Well, they say, "Well, no, actually, I don't think we will do that. You can let us go, that's brilliant, but we ain't going to stop preaching the gospel." So those are the kind of, I think those are the kind of markers of how serious a thing has to be before you can resist your government. On the sort of level of being able to pray to God and being able to share the gospel. Those are seriously big issues. And if we are blocked from doing those things, then absolutely you have permission to ignore what the government says. But I don't think you find many examples in the Bible of people resisting authority unless it's sort of that size, unless it's sort of at that level. So yeah, absolutely, Paul is not being as black and white as he seems to be at the start. And I think you can actually see that because in verse 5, he gives this reason for why we should submit and be good, why we should do good things. And one of them is to avoid punishment from the government. And the other one is for the sake of conscience. So if your conscience tells you that submitting to that rule is evil, then you've got to think pretty hard about whether to submit to that rule. But I think one of the reasons that Paul writes this so starkly and is so absolute about this is because he's trying to say to the church in Rome, look, actually, 99% of the time, what you do is submit. Almost all the time, what you do is submit. There may be some exceptional circumstances when you can resist what the government is saying. But actually, the vast majority of the time, we submit to those in rule over us. Because ultimately, God did put them there. So for us, as we read this passage, citizens in the UK, under the UK's rule and law, the main thing is that Paul is saying, submit, do what the government says, obey the law, obey the rule of this land. I think there's something else going on in this passage, though. And I think he's talking to more than one audience, in a sense. He's writing this letter to the church in Rome, definitely. But the church in Rome is quite a big deal, actually. I mean, Paul's talking about them being a strong church, and I think Paul knows that the power of the gospel means that the church in Rome will grow and be big and have an influence on the city. I think Paul is aware of the fact that people will take notice of the church, that the rulers and the authorities in that city will take notice of the church. So this letter of instruction from Paul, one of the most prominent figures in Christianity, to the Roman church, is not just going to be seen by the Roman church. Actually, something else will happen. Some of the authorities in the city will probably get hold of it. Maybe it'll be passed on by someone within the church, or maybe they'll seek it out because they've heard a rumor that Paul has written to them. And they've heard that it's there, that it's somewhere, and so they send someone to go and find it and say, okay, well, what is this guy, what is this Paul saying to this church? Because the church will grow in influence, and so the city rulers will care about what the church is doing. And when they get this letter, Paul doesn't want them to read it and see resistance. Paul doesn't want them to read the letter and see a church which is going to oppose Roman rule and try and overthrow the government. Because that's not the point of the church. Church isn't there for that. Church is there for the gospel. So Paul's put this stuff in, I think in part, to say to the people in government, look, this is actually what church is for. We're here to submit to your rule because we have our own agenda, which is not political. We have our own purposes, and they are not about government. They're about gospel, they're about kingdom. You can read about those purposes in the rest of the book. But there's also something else going on when Paul describes what government's purpose is. He says, government, rulers and authorities, are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. He says, rulers are supposed to approve of good things and punish bad things. So, when the Roman city's rulers get a hold of this letter and read this, maybe they'll read this and think, that's a good idea. Maybe we should do that. And I think where they were in Rome at that time, that was probably quite a difficult thing to achieve. Because the Romans were in rule, and no one else got a say, basically. If the Romans decided that you could do this and you couldn't do that, that was the end of it. You were in the city, you had to obey. But for us, today in this country, the situation is a little bit different. In this country, we live in a democracy. Democracy means we get to say. Democracy means we get to vote. But it doesn't just mean we get to vote. It means we get to write letters to our MP, to our local councillors. It means we get to read about the decisions that are going on in Parliament and the House of Lords. It means we get to say, I don't agree with that, and these are my reasons. Please read what I'm saying. And that is part of our government system. That's part of how this country functions and works. So where Paul kind of had to sneak it in, we can actually shout it at them. We can jump up and down and wave our hands and go, look, government, look, this is a good thing. Please approve of this. This is a bad thing. Please punish this. And it's really easy for us to do that. There are so many ways to communicate with our rulers. I wonder how many of you have actually done that. I wonder how many of you have sat in your home and thought, gosh, that's a stupid law. I wish they didn't have that. But done nothing about it. Despite the fact that we live in a democracy. We live in a country where we're allowed to say something. I know that a few times we've had people coming up at the front in church and saying things like, actually, there's a bill going through at the moment which is actually relevant to human rights. I know that when Neil was around, he quite often came up and talked about medical ethics stuff that was happening in Parliament at the moment. And I wonder how many of you switched off when he was up here and talking about it. I wonder how many of you saw him standing at the front thinking, oh, he's talking about medics again. He's talking about doctors and health and stuff. And it's not about me because I have another job somewhere else. And actually, it is about you because it's our job to tell the government what good and evil look like. Paul was desperately trying to do it here. We have such an easy way of doing that in this country. There are so many systems in place for communicating and sharing what we think, what our opinions are. And I don't know if any of you have noticed, there's a little bit of a vote going on Thursday. And I've heard Christians saying things like, I'm not going to bother voting because I just don't know enough about it yet. I've heard Christians say, I'm not going to bother voting because none of the three parties are any good, are they? They're all a bit rubbish. They're all basically the same. None of them are great. So I'm not even going to bother. Why have a voice? Comments like that kind of make me angry. Because we do have a voice. We have a Christian voice. We have God's voice. If you are old enough to vote, get informed and vote. And don't vote because it would improve your job. Don't vote because it would raise your pay slightly. Don't vote because that government's going to give you a tax credit and that's kind of nice for me. Vote because of morality. Vote because this government will approve of good and condemn and judge evil. And if you don't think any of the three of them are going to do it, pick the one who you think is going to be best at it and then tell them how to get better. On Thursday, I hope that all of you get to a polling booth and vote. And I hope that you vote because you've thought about who is going to do the best job of ruling like God says we should rule. God says rulers approve of good things and condemn, judge evil things. God says rulers are instruments of his wrath. They're the ones who carry out God's judgment on this world. If we have people in power in this country who don't know the difference between good and evil, then they're going to carry on carrying out judgment, but they're going to be doing it for the wrong reasons on the wrong people. So this election on Thursday is a big deal. But that's not the end of it, because in the 4-year gap between elections, we still get to influence. We still get to say what's right and wrong. We still get to communicate with our rulers. I'll tell you something. Every single MP and every single councillor in this city hold surgeries where you get to go and sit and meet them and have a chat and discuss issues. And each of those people represent hundreds, thousands of people in Leicester. And maybe 10 turn up, you know. So, like, chatting to the people who are in authority, and I want to say, this isn't just about government. This can include smaller authorities, like your boss at work. It is so easy to talk to them and say, actually, what you're doing here doesn't quite look right. And this is how I think you can make it better. And if they say, no, you're wrong, do it my way, then what does Paul say at the very start? He says, submit. Because the rulers are above you and God is above them. So you just submit. Default, submit to what they say. Even if you've told them it's wrong and they disagree with you, you still submit. You don't get a free pass just because you've expressed your opinion. And this is difficult. This is difficult because they do get it wrong. They will get it wrong over and over again. But we just keep trying. We just keep telling them what we think. And we just keep submitting. Because actually, the people who submit loyally are the ones who get to have the most influence. The people who follow the party line are the people who have the biggest voice. What I want to do for the next few minutes is I want to invite the band back up. And we're just going to stand together and pray. And there's a few things we need to pray for. I think the first thing we need to pray for, though, is for the Christians in this country who are feeling disillusioned and have decided already that they're not going to bother voting because their voice doesn't matter. I think it'd be really good just to pray for those people that they would see, they would realise that government is a big deal. And praise God, we live in a democracy where we can influence it for good. So I'd like to invite you all to stand together.